All right, thank you for that. This morning, you say I thought we finished Ecclesiastes last week. There's one more thing I want us to see. We saw last week how Solomon kind of got it together, but based on his experiences, he was able to give us some advice as to what we should do because he had been through a lot. Solomon had started out well. He had started to deviate from God and eventually forsook God, but I believe based on the end of the book of Ecclesiastes that he may have turned back, and he gave us some good advice. But what caused him to have issues in the first place? You ever hear when somebody seemingly is strong and things are going well for them, and all of a sudden there's some type of something happens in their life, a self-inflicted issue or something. They say that they were hit at their Achilles heel. How many of you ever heard that phrase before? That comes from the story of Achilles, who is a character in Greek mythology. It goes that when he was a baby, it was foretold that he would die young. So to prevent his death, his mother took him down and dipped him in the river Styx, and that was supposed to make him invincible. But of course, she had to hold him by the heel, so his heel did not get dipped in the water. And then in a battle one day, he was hit in the one place where he was vulnerable, his heel, and it caused him to die. As I think of Solomon, I think that Solomon had some Achilles heels. He had some areas in his life, although he was strong, that he was weak and could cause him to go down. If you remember in 1986 in January, the space shuttle Challenger exploded, and the seven crew members all died. When they started to study to find out what it was, what happened, they found out it was a small little rubber seal on one of the rockets that, because of the weather, got brittle, and it didn't do its function, and the space shuttle blew up because of that small little thing. I think that many of us, if we're not careful, we all have some type of Achilles heel that we need to watch out for. Some area that maybe where we're weak, and maybe where, if we're not careful, spiritually speaking, that can cause us issues in our lives. We need to know what these areas are, because if we know what the areas are where we would be weak or where we would be more tempted to mess up in our lives, then we can be on guard. That's what James talks about in James chapter 1. I'll read the verses to you. Verse 13 to 16, James said, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man." In other words, God doesn't tempt us. It's just that we, in our flesh, we are tempted. Verse 14 of James 1 says, "But every man is tempted when he was drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." James is saying that all of us, when we are tempted in areas where we would be weak or where we would have desires that maybe are not proportionally correct, and it's a stronger temptation for us. James tells us that so we can know what those areas are, and so that we can put up a guard or be ready or be strong so we don't fall into it. This morning, I want to ask us, what is our spiritual Achilles heel? All of us have areas in our life that we would be more prone to do something wrong, where we would be more prone to be tripped up. And if we know those areas, we can fight against them. As I look at here, I see that Solomon had several of them. And I just want to briefly go through each one, and I want us, as we're going through this, to think, is this an area where I am weak? Is this an area where maybe I would be caused to mess up? The first one would be, and by the way, we're checking ourselves this morning. We're doing a little spiritual check to see where we're at. And the first area we need to check is our emotions. Verse 1 of 1 Kings chapter 11, it says, "But Solomon loved..." We're going to look more at that in a minute. "Many strange women." This is where it started. Solomon let his emotions, his love, get out of joint, and it was in the wrong place. His love shifted from the right thing to the wrong thing. Now, what does that mean? For most people, love is purely emotional. We let our emotions lead us. When the fact of the matter is, we need to make sure we are leading our emotions. When we choose to live our lives and make our decisions based on emotions, we are headed down a wrong path, and we are headed for some deep seas and some troubled seas. We cannot be run by our emotions. Someone has said, emotions is a great passenger, but a horrible driver. Of course we have emotions. All of us do. But when we allow our emotions to be the vehicle by which we make our life choices, by which we decide what we do, we get in trouble. There's way too much emotion in our Christianity. Now, I don't mean we're robots. I'm talking about, you know, our emotions. One day we get up and we just love God and we just, everything's wonderful. And the next day we wake up and we don't even know who God is. Now look, just because we get up the one day and everything is wonderful, that's great. But you know what? Everything is still wonderful on the day when we get up and we're not just feeling it. But we let our emotions make that decision. James 1:8 says, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Listen, if you live your life and your emotions are just out of kilter and they lead every decision you make, you're going to be up and down, up and down, up and down. Why? Emotions just don't tend to be stable. So are our emotions. In Genesis chapter 49, verse 4, it says, speaking Joseph of Israel, speaking to one of his sons, said, you're unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. Could it be the reason some of us are unfaithful in our Christian life or we're unfruitful in our Christian life is because we're living our Christian life by emotions. And emotions are not the best. And then secondly, maybe we need to check our desires. But King Solomon loved many strange women. Now, not strange as in weird. Strange as in the type of women that God said that the Israelites were not supposed to be involved with. The type of women that a king was not supposed to be involved with. But why did he do that? I'll just be real honest with you. His desire. Although Solomon was wise, he went down because it was one area he totally did not take care of, the lust of the flesh. As we saw earlier in the book of Ecclesiastes, he just like, I saw this, I got it. I wanted it, I got it. I held back nothing that I wanted. Our desires. Our desires, if you understand this, sometimes are corrupted because we're still sinful individuals, right? Listen, when something happens to you to irritate you, the first thing you think of isn't, let me pray for that person. First thing that comes to my mind is, let's deal with that person. You know, not be kind to them. Why? That's the flesh. Someone has said, and I don't know if it's in the Bible, but it sounded pretty good when I heard it. He said, if you want to know the right thing to do, do the opposite of the first thing that comes to your mind. You know, you're at a restaurant and the waitress is having a bad day and maybe she takes it on you. Your first thought isn't to be kind. Your first thought is, how does no tip sound? But so we have to be very careful. Because we're sinful, our desires are sinful. And sometimes we desire the wrong things. Or we desire the things that God gave us, something we desire, but we desire it in the wrong way. Watch our desires. God tells us there's some desires that are good. We ought to have a desire for the Bible. We ought to have a desire to be obedient to God. We ought to have all those things. But so often, in the lust of our flesh, we desire things. We have a tendency to kind of gravitate towards the wrong direction. And so we need to be very careful. If our desire, look, that's what James said. James said, look, you know where Satan throws a bait? You know where temptation throws a bait? Like if you're trying to catch a certain fish or if you're trying to catch a certain type of rodent, there's a certain type of bait that they're attracted to. And all of us will have some type of desire. It's in different areas. And for some people, that desire in a certain area may be stronger. And we need to recognize that. Make sure that our desires, we're checking our desires, and we're not letting them go unchecked. Thirdly, let's check our obedience. Look at verse 2 of 1 Kings chapter 11. He says he loved many strange women of the nations concerning, here's the key, which the Lord had said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you. That's a way of saying you're not gonna intermarry with them. Verse 10, and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he kept not that which the Lord commanded. See, Solomon saw obedience as optional. Now, it wasn't like that in his early days. In his early days, when he was a brand new king and he came to the throne, he had a desire for God. He had a desire for the right kind of things. But as time came on and the wisdom came and the power and the recognition that came with that, and then the wealth came, and then the opportunity to do whatever he wanted. And all of a sudden, Solomon started thinking that he was above God. And that was a bad thing. God had specifically told the Israelites, don't intermarry with the people of the land. Why? Because they were idol worshipers. They didn't worship the true God. And by the way, the type of worship, and I've mentioned it before, the type of worship of these false gods in the Bible is not like we think, just a different type of church. Their worship involved immorality, murder of all kinds of things. Very paganistic. And God knew that they would get involved with that. And he said, don't, if you marry them, you're going to do that. And Solomon decided that he did not need to obey God. And so Solomon, those things that are natural in all of us, he started to try those, to attain those things on his own. He started acquiring horses and chariots. Why? Out of a desire for security. Well, God said, you don't do that. I'm your security. But he didn't listen. He started to acquire these wives and these princesses. God said, you don't do that. Solomon thought he could do what he wanted. The fact of the matter is, it got him. The things we think that we must do to achieve what we really desire in life, if they're not in obedience to God, they usually end up accomplishing the opposite. You see, we all want certain things in life. You just, the key things in life. You know, joy and health, what all that. But we go around, the process we use to get it is flawed. Because those are things that only God can give, and it comes from obedience from God. But we try to do it on our own, and in doing that, we are actually guaranteeing that the opposite is true. Someone has said the shortest distance between you and the life you really want is obedience to God. And I believe that. I believe when we're obedient to God, the things, we will be fulfilled. We will have security. We will have peace. All of those different things. Obedience to God is not optional. In a sense, though, obedience to God is optional only in that God does not force you to listen to him. But it is not optional if we are seeking a life of peace, security, meaning, and joy. And Solomon just kind of had that. He just thought he was, above the law, right? You know, it's funny, and I guess I'll be guilty of this too, right? We all think that we're bad stuff happens to the other person. That's for other people. I'm different, and we're not different. Fourthly, we need to check our direction. Look at verse 2. After he started intermarrying, it said, God told, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. And the verse 9, the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel. At one time, I believe, Solomon's heart, as much as is humanly possible for us, was totally in tune, turned to God. And God said, don't marry the, if you marry him, what's going to happen? Your heart that's directed towards me is going to start to turn. And then in verse 9, he says, your heart did turn. Our direction. What direction are we headed in spiritually? Some of us we have this natural thing to always head towards the wrong thing. Why? Because we're allowing things in our life that would turn our heart. I've been working in church long enough to see people that come, and God works in their life, and they have joy, and they have peace, and things are going well. And because they weren't careful, they've allowed something else to get into their heart and their life that replaced God, and slowly but surely their heart starts to turn. You know what happens when you turn? If I'm driving in my car and I turn right, guess what happens? My direction is now to the right. If I'm going, what's this direction? West, and I make a right, I'm no longer going west, I'm now going north. And if I turn long enough, I'm gonna go that way. East, thank you. You know, that way. What's your direction? I don't know where you're gonna end up in life, but I do know you're gonna end up where your direction is taking you. And if your direction is not 100% towards God, then you're going to end up somewhere else. What's your direction? That's why he tells us to be careful about our heart. In Proverbs 3:1, he said, this is Solomon, and he forgot what he said. My son, forget not my law. Let thine heart keep my commandments. In Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. In Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Hey, what's your direction this morning? Maybe your problem this morning is you're allowing yourself to deviate away from God. Next, let's check our commitment. Verse 2, it says, Solomon clave unto these in love. Now, wait a minute. Who did God want him to cleave to? Who did God want his heart to cleave to? The Lord. Thou shalt love the Lord with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And yet now Solomon's heart is all about his wives. It's all about these women. And his commitment level to God was just not there. Let me just say, the greatest thing that will help us not fall into any of these traps we're mentioning this morning is complete commitment to God. Because commitment make sure we don't get involved in these other things. Commitment will keep us from our godless emotions. Commitment will keep us from going the direction of our fleshly desires. Commitment will keep us from not obeying God, from being disobedient when we feel like being disobedient. And commitment will keep us on that right path when we don't feel like going down that right path. Now, we don't like commitment. We live in a time when, you know, and like, well, you know, I'm just not that type to commit. And by the way, it's probably true of a lot of people. They want to live together. They want to commit to any of these things. But it's funny. They're committed to their sports teams. Committed to their hobbies. Committed to anything that has to do with them. And there's nothing wrong with your sports team unless it's the Raiders. There's nothing wrong with a hobby, okay, unless it's crocheting. There's nothing wrong with these. But we do commit to things that are important to us. Let's be committed to God. That'll help us. But maybe we struggle in that area of our life. Next, check your indulgences. Okay, now this I can't even comprehend. Now, when teenagers, oh, yeah, this is great. All right, really? Verse 3, and he had 700 wives. Let that roll over you. You know who thinks that's a good thing? Someone who's not married. I don't know about you, but I got my hands full with one. And I don't mean that in a bad way. 700 wives. 300 substitutes. I mean, this guy is nuts. Now, I understand some of them were probably politically motivated, but I'll just be honest with you. A lot of them were just immorally motivated. He saw a woman, like, she's in. But think about this, Brother Pichardo. If he just had a date with each one of them, one a day, it would take him 3 years. And there might be a good point to that, huh? 3 years. This was nothing but immorality wrapped up in marriage. I'll just be honest with you. Solomon was out of control. He just gave in to whatever he wanted. That's a really bad way to live. And by the way, our society pushes that and pushes it and pushes it. You can't tell your children what to do. What are they going to learn? Really? You go somewhere, a little two-year-old's running the family. Not where I live. No two-year-old will ever run our family. And maybe I love my grandkids, but they're not going to come over and run the house. Okay? Pick that up. Play with it, but when you're done, pick it up. You know? The old guy. Don't stand on the lawn. They're killing our grass already. It's like, get off the grass. The kids all joke with me. I'm like, grass is going bald. Come on now. But listen, we're afraid to teach people, like, listen, there are things we want to do in life, but we don't do them because they're not best. We used to call that discipline. But we just live in a society that's like, express yourself. Whatever you feel, just do it. That's bad advice. Bad advice. Check our indulgences. I like the verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 27. Paul talking about his life. And Paul likens it to a sporting event or an athlete. And he says, but I keep my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached others, I myself should be cast away. Paul says, I make my body do what it's supposed to do, not what it wants to do. I bring it in subjection. If my body wants to, if I want to anger or just do something totally wrong, I make myself do what I am supposed to do. I bring it into subjection. That's what we're supposed to do. Okay? Next, check your worship. I'm not going to go through it, but you see that Solomon started worshiping the wrong things. Once all this started, his worship, what he ascribed worth to, what was important to him in the spiritual realm, was wrong. Ashtaroth was the female goddess of immorality of the Zidonians. Milcom or Molech was the god of the Phoenicians, to which infants were sacrificed in an immoral, I won't even say it, in a public setting, in an immoral party. I'll just put the word there. Chemosh or Baal, same thing there. Some of these gods, you would take one of them, I think it was Baal, his arms would go out, and they would heat the arms up until they were red hot, and they would put a baby on there, and it would sizzle to death while they were having an immoral party. He got involved in all that. We got to be very careful. What mistakes? Well, he allowed his wives to worship he married this woman and he allows them to worship their own gods. And then he indulges their idolatry by building places for them to worship. And then he's full-blown involved. See, whenever we start doing our own thing, we change our God. Say, wait a minute, I'm still at church. Some people in our country still claim to be Christians. They have molded God to be whatever they want him to be. Well, this is just what I want to do. Listen, that goes back to the indulgence. Listen, we worship God God's way. The Bible tells us, Jesus said, he that worships must worship in spirit and in truth. Truth is what God says. Remember Cain and Abel? They both brought a sacrifice, and God says, yours is rejected. He's like, well, wait a minute. I gave this to you. And he goes, that's not the sacrifice I asked you to bring. So we worship. And then lastly, and we're done, check your dedication. Verse 8, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and went not fully after the Lord. He was no longer dedicated to God. It's almost like, I can almost see how it happened. He's serving God, and then he brings these wives in, and he kind of tolerates what they're doing, and he slowly and surely, starts adding them. Well, I have the true God here, and I have the Chima, I have these other ones here, and eventually that one's gone. His dedication to God was completely gone. I've said this 100 times, but you can't be a joyful, successful Christian unless you're 100% in. It doesn't work halfway. You've got to be all the way in order for it to be important in your life? I said a lot this morning, but here's the thing. What is your weakness? You see, if you know what your weakness is, you know where you have to be careful. And by the way, I don't know what it is for you, but every single one of us in here, you know what your weakness is. You know where that area where you have a tendency to struggle. You know that area where you have a tendency to have to fight a little bit more. Hey, let's be very, very careful today. Let's make sure that, unlike Solomon, we're not picked off. Let's all stand this morning, please, just for a minute. Every head bowed, every eye closed.